Welcome to Paper Money, the biweekly podcast covering the business side of the game industry, from Clue, The Office, to Cthulhu Tech, USAopoly, to Wildfire. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Rhett Kipp.
Today is July 30th, 2010. And you know, Rhett, I swear I used Clue, The Office when we did Seize the last time, but I'm sticking to my guns.
There you go.
So, you know, since the original episodes are not available for download any longer, I can just repeat all of them up to about episode 25, I think.
That's, you know, a good thing. And had you not mentioned it, the four people that regularly listen would not have even known.
That's right. That's right. And if one of those four people would like to do a list of games alphabetically so that we can cross them off, right, as we go through, I'd be happy to pimp them on the show. Anyways, okay, moving on. We've got a good show this week. Hopefully we're going to have an interview with Rob Boyle of Eclipse Phase later on. We're going to have to record that separately from the rest of the show today. So we're supposed to track down Rob later today. Rhett's not going to be able to help interview him. Damn you, Rhett. And but anyways, we're gonna hopefully have Rob on the show. We got some news for you. We're gonna talk about RPGs and Gen Con, namely a lot of the stuff that's coming out. And again, we've got the interview with Rob. So, Rhett, are you there?
I am here. We're ready to roll.
Okay, I'm just checking. I've been going on and on.
I know. I didn't want to interrupt. You know,
our regular listeners expect a little banter at the beginning of the show, and I've been prattling on and on. Anyway,
yes.
No, fire away.
Banter. Start off with the news. Come on.
All right. And just for fun, I'm leading with this one. Settlers of America released this week, a.k.a. Catan Rails. This one actually looks like it's going to be a big seller. Came out this week from Mayfair, and I'm excited because I like the real games and the Catan games.
Yeah, it's a little confusing as to which category to put it into. But looks pretty cool.
Yeah. Did you have trouble filing it at the store?
Not yet, because it's still a new release.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
The challenge comes later.
All right, well, you'll have a couple weeks to think about it then. And in other news, JAKKS Pacific reported some positive results. Now, for those of you who don't know, JAKKS Pacific, a very mainstream toy market company, one of the larger companies you may have never heard of. But they've had a number of bad quarters, and in the latest quarter, sales were down $22 million to $123 million from the same quarter last year. But income was $3 million, which included a payout to the estate of the Jack Friedman, the late founder. And compare this to the fact that they had lost $406 million in the same quarter last year. They actually exceeded expectation, and their shares have risen. They've got a number of good licenses, including the ones with Taylor Swift and the upcoming movie Real Steel, which sounds stupid, and then you realize it stars Hugh Jackman, and you go, oh, that's bankable.
Yeah, you put a good star in there, and life is good.
Well, I think JAKKS is a good bellwether of the toy industry, right? Hasbro is probably going to, and Mattel are probably going to be profitable, or, you know, could lose a few million no matter what. Toys R Us has all sorts of retail-related issues that might not be related, really, to strictly speaking, the game industry or the toy industry. I think JAKKS is a good bellwether,
yeah,
for the mainstream toy market and or the mainstream game market, and that is coming back strongly enough that they can make some money. So, moving on, I just did, by the way, this next story I've included just because I like to say this next phrase, which is LEGO MMOG TCG.
Did it hurt your mouth doing that?
No, it's just MMOG TCG from LEGO. Anyways, Direwolf Studio, Direwolf Digital Game Studio is a new effort in online and offline trading card games, founded by Scott Martins, who previously founded Worlds Apart Productions, and is the studio head of Sony Online Entertainment in Denver. Their first offline project, and this is what applies to us, it's a TCG in partnership with LEGO. Based on the upcoming LEGO MMOG. So the MMOG is scheduled for October and the TCG for next year. Rhett, you and I have been talking for a while about the TCG market stabilizing and settling into a, you know, slight downward drift. And we said, look, if it's not a big license, don't do it.
Well, this is a big license.
Exactly. So this is the kind of stuff you're competing against. So if you guys are out there listening in your garage with your buds and you invented a TCG, I'm here to tell you, don't, because unless it says Lego on it and it's tied into the, you know, something else, it's, it, you're going to have a problem. So in fact, I actually talked to a guy at Protospiel, who was working on a TCG, and, he said that they were actually converting it to a living card game.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a better market right now. You know, we're seeing a lot of growth in that area.
Exactly. And people love the deck building. Thunderstorm is doing well. You know, Dominion obviously blowing the charts out. But again, TCGs, straight up, you know, booster pack kind of a thing, not going unless your name is, well, big.
Yeah.
All right. And speaking of small, Kickstarter is a site that lets people pledge money for an investment in someone's business, and you only pay if there's a minimum threshold reached. They did a great story over on thepropawn.com listing a bunch of game startups who are looking for money to get funded via Kickstarter. Now, I thought this was interesting. By the way, you'll have to go over to purplepawn.com to get the list. Most of them on the list were RPGs. What I thought was interesting was there's more than one way to skin a cat. And I thought this was a very interesting idea for startup funding. And I think it works for RPGs, right? Because you only need, okay, Rhett, what do you need for production on an RPG book? Let's say you need somewhere between $3,000 and $8,000 to do a short run of a Perfect Bound book.
That would be a good target.
Yeah. Yeah. Compared to, say 15 to 20 to do, really to do the art and to do a board game. So, and the production. So with Kickstarter, I thought it was very interesting. Just yet another way to, you know, that the market for the micro market is adapting and using the internet, not just with print on demand and digital press and stuff like that. But, you know, here now we're outsourcing the financing of that. I have no idea if how you get your money back on Kickstarter, by the way, which I think might be the trick when you're funding a game. But I do think it was interesting.
Yeah, you know, and it certainly allows lots of different people to start looking for stuff. I expect that if anybody's interested in regular investment and somehow has the idea of looking for the next big hit game or game company, you know, it gives them an easy link to find stuff with, too.
Yeah. So in any case, go over to purplepawn.com to find the list, or you can go over to Kickstarter directly, kickstarter.com. Take a look at that. And moving on. Everyone plays at the library. This is another Purple Pawn story. By the way, all the stories this week are from the Purple Pawn, except for one. We'll mention that later. Following up on his superb online course, Scott Nicholson has written a book elaborating on his advice for managing game programs in libraries. He's an associate professor at Syracuse University and host of a fun board game video reviews. And someone who's run many such programs himself, Scott has a lot of insight to share, blah, 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 blah. Yes, yes. Okay. He's an expert. Don't you love it when I paraphrase these articles? You know, and it's one of, and I just realized too, it's one of David's. I'm sure I'll hear about this at Gen Con.
Oh, yeah.
In any case, the book is called Everyone Plays at the Library, and it should be helpful to anybody running a game program, which is why we're mentioning it on the show. His conceptual framework for the gaming experience and SNACS, S-N-A-K-S, model of five game archetypes are excellent tools to help with selecting games and designing the gaming environment. You know, organized play, you know, game nights at your store, at the library, at your church, wherever, it's a great way to bring people into the hobby. It's a great way to find other players. It also helps to be organized.
You know, absolutely. And, you know, again, I'll go back to, I still think the library system is heavily underutilized. Every time we recommend that our local guys, you know, look into the library system, they look astonished that that's even a possibility.
Yeah. And it's, and like I said, it is getting more so with the, you know, Hasbro and others partnering with the American Library Association to do Game in the Library Day and giving out free product. And I think it's gaining steam. In fact, I don't know if we reported on it. I know that I read the article, I think it was last year, late last year, early this year, about there are now checkout games at libraries in England. So,
well, I was going to say, even here, I know in our local libraries, you can actually check out a couple of the RPGs. They have if you're in a hardcover format, they tend to have you on the shelf.
Do not tell my son.
Tell him what?
That you can check out RPGs from the library.
Do what now?
Exactly. Good man. Anyways, moving on, speaking of organized play, there is a new Bakugan organized play program. It's being launched by Spin Master at Toys R Us stores across the United States. The first Bakugan Battle League will take place this coming Saturday, July 24th. Whoops.
That was last week.
Yes, excuse me. La la la. Brawlers will be able to collect exclusive promo cards. Will have been able to collect exclusive promo cards and decide the outcome of a Bakugan storyline. Participants will be asked to choose sides in a brawl between Shun and Ace, with each win counting as a vote for their selection. I bring this up only because, again, for the TCGs that are doing well, aka Bakugan, organized play is huge and a great way to bring people into your store to buy stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, the most obvious of that is Friday Night Magic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
exactly.
There, nothing beats it.
So yes. So, if you play Bakugan, if you're looking to set up a play program, check this out. And by the way, being launched by Spin Master, new owners of Stratego. I can't wait for the Stratego organized play program.
It's coming. It's coming.
Oh, 2-9. Crap. So. Man, hours of that kind of goodness. All right.
Oh, that is going to go there. Oh, it's a bomb.
Exactly. So, and sorry. Our final news story of the week comes from BoardGameNews.com. And this regards Automobile. Martin Wallace's Automobile, coming from Mayfair Games in 2010, had been previously announced with Phalanx Games as the publisher of the German version, and will instead be published in Germany by Lookout Games. Since Lookout is licensing the game from Mayfair, this publisher switch-up should entail no changes in what Mayfair has previously announced about the game. Again, this one's from BoardGameNews.com. And, Rhett, I have to call Mayfair later today on some unrelated stuff. I wish I could have called them before the show because I want to find out what this means for their relationship with Phalanx.
Well, it also could be that the Phalanx has just decided that they're going to focus on their historical games as opposed to on their general interest games.
Mm-hmm. It could be. I know that there were some creases in the bedsheet of that relationship, as it were, between Phalanx and Mayfair. But I thought those had gotten ironed out, and so I'm a little surprised to see this. But you know, as you know, the stuff that has been released by Phalanx by Mayfair here in the States has all been, I won't say hardcore historical, but definitely heavy Euro historical, and I don't know that Automobile fits that mold.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a more general interest Euro game style.
On the other hand, who doesn't want a piece of a Martin Wallace title at this point? So, anyways, we'll have to
apparently see. Phalanx Games.
Yeah, well, exactly. So on that note, hey, I'd like to mention our wonderful sponsors, the Purple Pawn. Great game news on the internet. In fact, they're on both internets. If you're that kind of person. And but anyways, the sponsor is the Purple Pawn. They host our podcast. We get a big chunk of our news from them. So I just want to say thank you very much to thepurplepawn.com. And David Miller, I promise I will not mangle the next story of yours that I read quite so badly.
You'll hear about it anyway.
I'm sure I will. Anyways, I'll buy him a beer at Gen Con and all will be forgiven.
Oh, well, that's always a good thing. You know, that's why he's mad at you.
It's the magic power of hops.
I was going to say, but that's why he's mad at you, because he knows he gets free beer out of the deal if he just shows that he's mad at you, whether he is or not.
You know, that's not a bad idea. By the way, we're going to see Jeff Shallett from the two half squats at Gen Con this year. His partner, Dave, couldn't make it. Dave Kleinschmidt, who I drank under the table during the podcast or pub call. I think. But anyways, moving on. Speaking of Gen Con,
well, we have a Gen Con preview.
Yes, Red had a special assignment this week. We should come up with some special assignment music, some dramatic news music.
Some dramatic news and music. Yeah, I like that idea.
Special investigative report from Rhett Kipp.
Yeah, well, always an exciting time, you know. I kind of live for Gen Con. This will be my 4,000th Gen Con.
Excellent. Brett was there when Gary Gygax thought of it.
That was, it was a dream.
Schmo at TSR.
No, Gary probably truly does deserve the kudos for Gen Con. I believe Gary was the primary organizer to the original Gen Con. What else can we say about Gen Con? Well, it's first off, it's Gen Con, so both Ben and I will be attending.
Yes, we will be there. And through some weird quirk of fate, I'm actually working at the Catalyst booth this year. No, Rhett, that's normal for you.
I am. You find Battletech and Shadowrun, you can usually find me.
I was talking to Randall. I said, gosh, you know, if only I could be involved somehow with heavier-than-air floating battleships. And Randall said, have I got the gig for you?
You know, and what a gig.
That's right. So I'll be.
But I did win my bet. I don't. You won't see me with a handlebar mustache this year because I did win my bet.
What was your bet?
My bet was that Catalyst couldn't actually get Leviathans out in time for Gen Con 2010.
No, I'll be honest. I don't think it's a spring 2011 title. I think it's going to be summer 2011.
I will leave that to them to find.
Randall, it sounds like they're fairly along in the production process based on our conversation with Randall.
They're way progressed on this one. I think this is literally one of those products that the only reason we're not seeing it is because of their financial situation.
Correct. And by the way, I think it's a cool product. I'm a sucker for this kind of thing. So I'm going to have a good time with it. But anyways, we're going to be busy at the Catalyst booth all day, but I've already got a couple of meetings set up, at lunch and at dinner and things like that. If you want to hang out with us, drop us an email since we're both going to be there. We'll bring that up after the listener mail segment. We're also probably going to be, there's a podcaster meet and greet, I believe, on Thursday night. So Rhett and I will probably be there. And Rhett, how will they know us? We'll be the handsome ones, right?
We'll be the handsome ones. And you can look for myself. Look for the really old guy. That would be me.
You could be like a robe and a staff.
No, that would be, you know, if I wanted to go in there and be in the costume contest.
Oh, okay.
I'm not quite that old or that qualified, you know. My voice to the supreme being is not quite so loud.
But you are about the 3,000-year-old man sometimes.
I am about the 3,000-year-old man. It goes back to why this is my 4,000th Gen Con.
That's right. So we're both going to be there. Now, last year's Gen Con, everyone was a little nervous. Given the state of the economy, and they, you know, attendance was down a little bit, but not much. But the sales were really strong at Gen Con. What do you think Gen Con is going to do this year?
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure that this year we're going to see an increase with Gen Con, both in attendance and in sales. I think attendance will probably be, you know, 6 to 7%. I'd like to see it be higher, but I don't think it will be. Less travel restrictions for people. Seems to still be some decent money. The economies aren't completely in the toilet in the Gen Con drawing area. The other, you know, the sales end of it, I think the reason that's going to be higher is, one, we've seen already Origins showed quite a lot of increases there. Mm-hmm. Two, there's always a lot of cool new product in there, especially if we're going by dollars. Prices are just up. You know, we didn't even talk about all the $100 games that there are going to be out there this year.
Right.
But I'm astonished at how many $100 products that we're seeing on a regular basis now. That they're not, you know, the quality to warrant the prices, but that they exist at all is pretty much an indicator of, you know, what the economy's like for gaming.
Right. And that's something we talked about in the previous show about that $75, $100 price point. The quality is outstanding. But there's a lot more of them than there used to be. I think attendance is going to be up 5%, but I think sales are going to be up 10 to 12. I think they're going to be on a button with Origins on that. I think they might be up. I'd say they were up slightly higher if I thought there was a really slam-bang RPG title coming out. Now, I know there's some good stuff that's coming out, but I think the heat right now is after the board games and to some extent the miniatures now that Warhammer Zillionth Edition is out. But I'm going to say 10 to 12% sales increase. Again, there's no way to tally that really. But I think that would be about right. And last year was a good year anyway for the sales.
Yeah, last year was a good year. I think almost everybody's going to report increased sales again this year. I don't see anyone not having some very strong products this year.
Well, Upper Deck will probably have decreased sales.
Well, we won't talk about Upper Deck.
Booth size this year, zero. Last year, 25,000 square feet, I think.
Yeah, so it's something on the level of ridiculous, I believe, is the term we're looking for.
Yeah, pretty much. I think there were squatters who lived there all during the show. Anyways, but let's talk about releases that are going to be at the show.
Well, there's just tons of stuff. Actually, I'm going to start out, instead of talking about releases, talking about the questionable one, Wizards of the Coast. Wizards of the Coast, you know, we talked about boost size here. Another, you know, reduction in Wizards of the Coast boost size. No restrictions this year on what the retailers can bring, which is probably like a half a dozen.
Right. Well, you know, Wizards is actually sharing a booth this year with Flying Buffalo.
So Rick gets one, you know, one table, and
he's going to be selling nuclear war on the one side. They're going to be doing that.
Yeah, you know. So the question though with Wizards is, you know, will they be bringing any of the Essential series in, and will they be bringing any of the? I'm sorry. Dark Sun,
right.
Campaign setting. You know, those are the two big releases for the month for fourth edition. And, you know, I'm not even sure they're going to bring the stuff, which is, it's strange. You know, now I'll bet you that we see something for HeroScape.
I don't think there's an AH title, and I don't know. I haven't heard anything announced on HeroScape, so if something comes out, great.
Yeah, I'm surprised given that, you know, there is one big AH title that they've been talking about, and I still haven't seen a date release for it, which is the Axis and Allies Europe edition to go along with the Pacific they released earlier this year, which, you know, is again that the giant, what's like 6 foot square board when the two of them are combined.
Well, I know that I know they're doing Axis and Allies Guadalcanal is being played. I think they have a few events. I think that's the new one or one of the new ones. I mean, one of their event ones like D-Day.
Right.
Well, but I digress. We're going into detail on.
We're going into details, and you know what we're trying to do here is cover a lot of ground.
Yeah, we're trying to do a drive-by.
Well, we'll talk about the people who are bringing stuff and, you know, people we can count on a regular basis. Speaking of which, Paizo, Pathfinder campaign setting, the World Guide, the Inner Sea is coming out for the Pathfinder game system, along with, I'm sure, a couple of novels, a couple of a flip mat is coming out for that, some modules and things of that nature. Paizo is just incredible. Paizo reminds me of the old original TSR. They've got a schedule. They stick to their schedule. Yep. They hit their schedule like 90%.
For those of you who aren't 110 like Rhett and I combined, actually, no, we're not even 110 combined, but we've been around for a while. Anyways, TSR used to, if anyone remembers, used to basically they would publish the whole year's schedule in advance. Was it around Thanksgiving time, right? Or was it around Christmas?
Yeah.
Of the year before, they would give you the whole schedule for the next year. And if you were smart and had kept your sales history, you could basically order the entire line for the next year and get an outstanding discount. And they would hit all the release dates for the next year. It was like bang, bang, bang. It was like clockwork. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I was going to say they typically hit about 98% of the releases, and occasionally even like exceeded that by catching one or two a month early.
Yes.
It was, you know, completely different than what we see in most of the rest of the industry. Different finances, but. You know, their finances got them where they are today, which is now an IP.
Yes. Moving on to companies that still exist. What's AEG got?
You know, I'm kind of lost with AEG. You know, they did a really beautiful release.
No, what's FF? They went to FFG.
They're at FFG now. Yeah, the big ones there would be City of Thieves and Dust Tactics. Also, a smiley face card game.
City of Thieves is a Thieves World license, right?
It is a Thieves World license.
Robert Lynn Asprin still milking that baby. Awesome. All right. Anyways.
He's dead. So wouldn't that be his estate?
Well, good for them.
Okay.
It's like last year, someone came out with a, or maybe the year before, someone came out with a Princess Bride board game. And I was
yes.
like, wow, that's like a 20-year-old license. That's awesome. Get some mileage. Okay. So FFG's got the stuff we talked about.
And I'm sure with FFG, there's a lot of other titles that are coming for the year. FFG tends to have all sorts of really cool stuff. Some of which, you know, we won't see till fourth quarter, maybe not even until early first quarter, you know, 2011.
Right.
Pinnacle has the new Deadlands Reloaded Player's Guide Marshall's Handbook.
That's all the Savage World system, right?
That's all part of the Savage World systems. Along with that, they have the Savage World Starter Kit, which is a really cool item. Glad to see they're finally coming out with this. It's like all the weird kind of components that Savage World uses put into one place. It's nice because, you know, they do use a lot of different types of randomization systems. Not that you couldn't find it elsewhere, but it's kind of cool. I think that, you know, if you're a Savage Rule guy, that, you know, this is the product that you do one-stop shopping on.
Right. Now, we talked to Randall the other week. Catalyst has a new product. There's the Shadowrun Corporate Sourcebook. I think there's a couple of Battletech items. It looks like the Battletech map kits are finally out.
Yeah.
Are going to be out.
The two big box sets, they're hopefully That's going right. to make it there. Apparently, they won't know until like they walk into the show themselves, is the Battletech Anniversary box set and Balance of Power.
Balance of Power is interesting. That one is a new license, or not a new license. It's a new game, right? It's based on a brand new system. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing that one. Now, what is I'm trying to think. What is Privateer got? I think they've got some miniature stuff.
Privateer has just released the new rule set for Hordes, and knowing Privateer, they will have lots and lots of miniature support both for, you know, Hordes and for War Machine. Typically, what we get to see from them is releases that go as far as sometimes October, November, that won't make it out into retail at that point until that point, which is always available at Gen Con. So, you know, a lot of cool, preview stuff for all the hardcore fans there. Haven't heard any word on when they're going to have the new Iron Kingdoms RPG. I know that it's being worked on with its own games, you know, its own game mechanisms this time. Mm-hmm. And looking forward to that one.
I called that. I told you when D20 died, we're going to see tons of new systems coming up.
Well, they have no choice. I mean, I know. No one.
That's not the shh, shh, shh.
I'm sorry.
I sounded like a genius right up until then. anyways, I was talking to the guys at Mayfair. A guy at Mayfair the other day on some unrelated stuff. Automobile, which we mentioned earlier in the show, they were hoping to have at Gen Con. Sounds like it's not going to be out until the end of August. So Automobile won't be there for Mayfair. I don't know what new stuff they have. They've got a couple of recent releases, but I think Automobile, they were hoping to have at the show. They're not going to. But I only mention that because their booth is about twice the size of Wizards.
Yeah. Well, I do expect that, you know, knowing Mayfair, Automobile will probably have at least playable copies there at the show.
Yes. Knowing Mayfair, there will most certainly be demos of that game there. I'm trying to think who else I wanted to.
I know there's a number of companies that have Call of Cthulhu products. That, you know,
that's right.
I am slighting people here by not mentioning their names. I just cannot remember all of the Call of Cthulhu people who are licensing, producing products for this. And there are just tons of people out there.
There are going to be a ton of RPG releases. I have been getting hit with short solicits left and right from Alliance. So it's obviously it's that time of year. All the RPG stuff is going to come out. I think it's a real healthy year on releases. I heard even Cubicle 7 might come out with a product. But sorry, a little dig there at Cubicle 7. Anyways, I think it's going to be a big year in terms of number of releases or things that are new on the show floor. As is the case normally, how sales, I think, will go up. I don't know that that's going to be across the board, right? I don't know if everyone's going to have a great year. Someone is going to release a dog, but...
Well, you know, that happens, and there's a lot of new people that are going to be attending for the very first time, testing the waters, people who are very appropriate for the market. You know, there's a couple of new indie RPG guys that are going to be out there. A couple of unusual people out there, you know, who are trying to find out if there is a market for themselves there. We've talked about this before. This is a great Gen Con is a great test bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like I said, if you look at the games that people are running, you'll be able to see, similar with the role playing games. Everybody runs events with their new system, so there'll be a lot of chances to actually play the cool new stuff. That said. Rhett, I think it's about time we moved into listener mail. If we say any more about Gen Con without Adrian here, we could go on and on and on.
Yeah, so, I was going to say, we could be here forever and ever on, you know, previewing Gen Con because there is just frankly so many new things.
Exactly. And so, again, folks, we hope to see you next week in Indianapolis. We're going to be there. Drop us an email on the, we're going to give you that in a minute, but papermoney@purplepawn.com, and hopefully we'll meet up with you. Thursday night, we think, is the podcaster meet and greet. Look for it in your Gen Con show book. Now, that said, Rhett, do you want me to summarize this listener mail, or do you want to go for it?
I can do this one. Okay. This is kind of fun. Our listener mail this week comes from Dan. No last name for Dan. Sorry.
I think it's Duran. Dan is one of the hosts of the Dice Like Thunder Warhammer related podcast. So,
okay.
And who cleverly, by the way, did not use the word hammer in their name and is therefore not getting their asses sued off by a unlike Podhammer.
But anyway, to sum up, Dan basically asks effectively, why is it that brick and mortar stores aren't utilizing the internet to its fullest extent? He gives a number of examples of people who do a fantastic job. But, you know, he mentions the fact that for the most part, we don't see brick and mortar doing much more than using it like a Yellow Pages or, you know, just a kind of a little sign saying we exist. As far as to, you know, and his question is pretty much why? Why are they having problems?
Yeah. Well, the IT term for the kind of websites he's talking about, by the way, would be brochureware, right? It's just a little page that says, hi, we're a game store. If you're lucky, they're updating the new releases regularly, but there's not a lot there, right? And if you and I both know that the internet could do so much more.
Yeah.
So
I think the there's
why
a number
aren't they?
Of reasons. Yeah, I was going to say I think there's a number of reasons. So the first one is that most brick and mortar stores aren't very large. Their permanent staff is typically one or two guys who are owners as well. They may or may not have any experience whatsoever in IT. I suspect that there's a lot of brick and mortar stores that don't have any internet presence simply because they don't even know how to get there. And that's a problem. Dan does mention a couple of things, like linking games, getting out there and advertising, your special events, getting out there and having, he talks about podcasts that, some of the fan sites in their local area are attached to their, local game stores and things of that nature, all of which are great ideas if you have a clue. Part of it is I think that this is very foreign. Having, been in the industry before there was an IT community or an internet presence, the entire world is still trying to figure this whole thing out. I mean, it is still, fertile ground, a lot of new breaking ideas coming out all the time on this. But Ben, you're in the thing. I mean, that's what you did for years. Give them some more reasons.
They're lazy bastards. No.
It's true. Sadly, it is.
No, it comes down to a couple of things you said about most game stores are small. Most game stores have a couple of key guys who are running the joint. Maybe only a couple of guys who are running the joint. Retailers, the gross profit on a game is on the order of 45 to 50%. 50% if you're extremely lucky. But let's say that the gross profit on your game is 45%. Your net, all right, by the time you're done with overhead and everything else, if you're lucky, is 5 to 7% on your store. Okay, that's not a lot of extra money to throw at a project if you can't do it yourself.
Right? Well, and also to see what return it would give for you. I mean, it's going to be a fairly large investment, it's time consuming because it has to be, if it's going to be valuable, it has to be constantly updated.
This is exactly the thing, is that we come down to after the money issue. It comes down to a couple of things that are, one is time, okay, in that having been in a situation of having had to create content for websites on a regular basis, it's tough, right? I mean, when you have other stuff to do and you have to sit down for sometimes a couple hours a week to do content, it gets difficult. Now, theoretically, you can set up your website so you have like a wiki or something like that so that the guy who's doing the Pokemon tournament can update that part of it, et cetera, et cetera. It never works out that way.
No, I know, for example, the local store I work for has both a website and a Facebook site. Mm-hmm. They're updated, on new releases on a regular basis. They're updated on special events on a reasonable basis. But, there's a number of things I've talked about that It would be great to do, but no one has the time to actually get that job done. There's a lot of other jobs, mostly about, you know, making sure the store is presentable and sellable. And
by the way, you know who did your game store's website? You're talking. You're talking to him.
I was going to say, going to.
By the way, Rich, if you're listening, it's time to refresh the site, actually. But anyways, the other thing I wanted to mention too, okay, is that we're talking about board game and card game retailers, in some cases, comic retailers who carry board games and card games. These are folks who, in many cases, decided that analog was the way to go, right? They're not interested in the internets or the interwebs. And consequently, it's not a focus of their business. And there are two other reasons I'm going to throw out here for this. Okay, one, there's the old saw about, 50% of the money I spend on advertising is wasted, and if I knew which 50%, I wouldn't spend it. There is no, it's difficult with a web thing, unless you've got a coupon in your hand, to measure how much the time you're putting in on that website is resulting into increased game store sales. It's very easy to build up a community. Okay, but it's more difficult to measure whether or not that time-money equation works for you. And finally, the last reason, a lot of brick-and-mortar stores view the internet as the enemy.
Absolutely.
They're competing against FunAgainGames.com and other online discounters, and this bothers them. So they say, screw it, I'm not going to put the time and effort into it, because if they're on the internet, chances are they're going there anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the constant,
which I think is the wrong decision to make, by the way, but
I'm in agreement with you on that. I mean, the answer is, meet them head on.
And Dan, I'm going to throw out one more reason, and I think we're going to wrap this up so we can move into an interview. And Rhett, feel free to jump in on this. Until the last couple of years, my last couple will say 3 to 5, and I would even say last three only in terms of ease of use. There haven't been the tools to do this easily. Okay. Now anybody can build a website. The tools have been around to build a quick website easily. The tools to build a prefab forum based website with, photo galleries and easily updated and calendars. I don't think that's been around long enough for anyone outside, who's not comfortable with IT, to get comfortable with the idea of doing this. Now it's built into GoDaddy. You get a GoDaddy site, you can get all this, PHP, BB, and all sorts of other stuff built in. But until recently, it was just not available enough for people to do.
Yeah, it's been difficult for people to do, and equally so, longer-term brick-and-mortar stores, the successful guys, the guys who've been successful for a decade or more, again, I'm going back to, they may have no real feel for this themselves. There's no one out there giving them a presence. I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen an organization whose entire goal, like distributors, is to build local game store websites. For not just necessarily for the game industry, but for all sorts of small businesses.
I think Gamma and Astra, if you're listening, might be a good initiative.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been sitting here thinking for a while that would be something that would be really cool to see at Gamma, because, Dan's right. There's a tons of community things that would be really neat to see available, about what's going on at my local game stores. I've got, being in the Chicagoland area, I have a number of local game stores. If I was in Indianapolis, it'd even be more. I don't really want to have to travel to each of them to find out what they're doing. It would be really cool to have not only a presence, but have an active presence, out there saying, this is the cool event going on here. We've got this cool release thing coming on there, so on and so forth.
Dan, excellent question. Rhett and I spent about five times too long talking about it than we'd actually planned to, because it was such a good question. So thank you very much. Rhett, how can they get in touch with us to send us the next great question?
Well, you can email us at papermoney@purplepawn.com. You can Skype us at Paper Money Podcast. You can phone us at 773-634-9377. Somehow I always want that jingle.
I'd heard from our one fan that they were going to work on that, but I haven't heard anything yet. So, and for those who are still wondering, there is a dedicated RSS feed for us, so you don't have to lose a track of Paper Money and all the purplepawn.com news. And that that RSS feed is purplepawn.com/category/papermoney/feed. So you can track us down that way. Now, that said, Rhett, hopefully this is the portion of the show where we get to interview Mr. Rob Boyle. I'm here with Rob Boyle, the line developer for Eclipse Phase from Posthuman Studios. Rob, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You are quite welcome. And as I mentioned earlier, Rhett had to bail on us. Normally, Rhett would be a part of the interview, especially for talking to you, Rob. But he is unfortunately working, so the bastard.
Yeah, we can lay back.
Yes, exactly. And he really did want to be here for this. So, anyways, let's jump right into the interview, I guess. Let's not jump right into the interview. Rob, I'm kind of ambushing here because I didn't ask for a bio. You've been doing this for a long time, so I guess tell us about your history. I understand you've worked with Shadowrun a little bit, but give us your what's your pedigree?
I've been in the game industry for 13 years. Started at FASA as an editor, and that's how I know Rhett, because he came on at FASA shortly after I did, I think. And started off as an editorial department, but I was a major Shadowrun fan and player too. And Mike Mulvihill was the lead developer for Shadowrun at the time and was working on a third edition of Shadowrun. So basically I ended up getting pulled in to help him out, get that third edition out. And then, they brought me on as assistant developer to work with him. And so FASA shut its doors. And then, when FanPro acquired the Shadowrun license from WizKids and decided to set up a U.S. company, they basically hired me to take that on and start up the company and run with Shadowrun. And so I did that for FanPro for 5-6 years. And we did a couple of games like Classic Battletech 2. And then everything kind of fell apart with FanPro a few years back, and we all left and went to Catalyst Game Labs. Right after that time, we had just done Shadowrun 4th Edition, and I was ready to work on. I'd been working on Shadowrun for quite a while at that point, almost 10 years. I was ready to work on something different.
I was going to ask about that actually. Yeah, at what point do you go, okay?
Yeah, it was I think after getting the 4th Edition out and getting all the and working on the core rule books for that. Mm-hmm. Because that was the second time I'd done a lot of work on core rulebooks for Shadowrun. I mean, the 4th edition is a completely different system, so we're reinventing a lot of it. But, yeah, I was definitely feeling the burn at that point and ready to move on to something different. And, you know, I've done other freelancing and worked on other game lines over the years.
Right.
But you know, Shadowrun was the main thing I'd done for a really long time.
And so moving from one dystopian universe, I guess, to the other. You came up with and developed the Eclipse Phase universe. So
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, that was me and Brian Cross, old friend of mine, who also did some work on Shadowrun 4th Edition. We sat down and came up with the Eclipse Phase setting, and decided to run with it after we switched things over to Catalyst. So.
Awesome. Anyways, sorry, I kind of ambushed you with the biography thing. I didn't tell you I was going to lead with that. So thank you. All right. You're handling it well. Good that you know your past. The one thing I wanted to, the big question I wanted to ask is now you guys were with Catalyst Game Labs. Catalyst ran off a cliff into a brick wall, whatever you want to call it, earlier this year. And you went from being basically a design studio under the umbrella of a larger corporation to being a standalone company, and rather abruptly. How has that transition gone for you guys? Did it put a major monkey wrench in the works? Was it smooth sailing? How did that go?
It was definitely a hump that we had to get over. and it wasn't easy, but everything has fallen into place rather nicely, actually. Mm-hmm. Beforehand, we really had no infrastructure for post-human studios at all before. We set it up as just the entity to own the IP for Eclipse Phase, mm-hmm. and this other card game Adam was working on, Paparazzi, and then possibly other games we did in the future.
Right.
But we hadn't done anything else with it. We didn't even have a bank account for it or anything.
So this was a big, you guys had to basically from scratch come up a business side to the organization.
Yep. We still have a lot on our plate, a lot to do, but luckily, Eclipse Phase had been doing very well, since its release. Mm-hmm. And so, when we started, we knew right away that, we kind of looked at the different models we could, run the company as, we knew right away we didn't want to handle the distribution or marketing ourselves.
Right.
Maybe at some point down the line, but that was too much for us to bite into at the moment. And, we had some other rules that we set right off the bat. Like one of our rules was that none of us would ever have to go to the post office and mail a box ourselves. So things like that, just things that we didn't want to do because we wanted to focus on the games and focus mm-hmm. on other aspects of running the business. So then we started shopping around, looking for publishing partners. And at the same time, we knew that we were going to do things differently and that we were going to handle all the production of the books ourselves in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So we would handle all the dealings with freelancers ourselves. We would contract with the freelancers. We would pay the freelancers. And we wanted, partly because we've had so many issues with that and just our experience with different companies and how that's gone poorly.
Right.
We wanted to be fully in control of that. And like we kind of had some rules on, how we wanted to treat our freelancers and how we wanted to pay them. Mm-hmm. And so being in charge of that was a major component. So we were looking for a partner that would handle the fulfillment side of things and do our marketing.
Now, can I ask who you guys ended up working with on that?
We ended up going with Sandstorm.
Okay, and that's David Stenzel Garner's company, correct? Is that,
yes.
Am I correct in that? Okay, all right. You've worked with David when he was at Catalyst as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, it's kind of funny because in a way it's one of the things I probably wouldn't have expected that we'd have gone, because in the past, actually, Dave and I have butted heads on a lot of issues when we worked at Catalyst. But then kind of the way things went at Catalyst, and Dave and I had some conversations afterward, and mm-hmm. saw a little more eye to eye on some things, and the way Sandstorm is going about setting up their company and working with the different studios, they've ended up getting some of the other exiles or refugees from Catalyst, like Wildfire,
mm-hmm.
And so they're setting up themselves up kind of specifically as like a capitalization outfit to help their studios get the money they need to do what they need to do, and help build them up, but still give the studios a lot of autonomy and control, and have everything be transparent, and have it be a much better scenario for the studios overall.
So it turned out that the devil you knew actually was a good fit, so to speak.
Right? Yeah.
Kind of putting words in your mouth. I'm going to see David at Gen Con. He's going to slap me in the face for saying the devil you know. But no, he wouldn't do that. But yeah, so now basically what you've been able to do, though, is you're now a standalone company, but you've been able to offload a lot of your, quite frankly, a lot of the crummy business stuff to Sandstorm. And you guys can still focus on designing the games. Is that pretty much how it's working out?
Exactly, yeah.
Did you have to buy QuickBooks?
We're trying to get by with TurboCash, but
okay.
We might have to break down and switch, yeah.
Okay, well, if you've gotten by without it so far, I'm impressed. So, if someone else can handle the accounting package, you're doing all right in my book.
Yeah.
So... All right, so you've transitioned now, as you know, and I'm informing our listeners, Eclipse Phase won. Was it the Origins Award last year? Was it the Any? I apologize, but it
we won the Origins Award this year for best RPG.
See, I apologize. So yeah, in fact, yeah, the you guys won, Pooh won. Yeah, there were a bunch of winners out of that group of launches. So I guess where I'm going with this is that you guys have an award winning game with Eclipse Phase. It's doing well, it's selling well. But you're not under the aegis of a company with a larger release schedule. Are you guys going to continue with the single line with Eclipse Phase? Are you guys going to look at launching a new setting or a new game to complement it? How is that going to go? Now that you've got to think, I guess, about the business decision, how are you looking at doing that in the future?
We're definitely going to be focusing on Eclipse Phase. Like, that's our priority. And we're still, you know, it's a small outfit right now. Like, there's three of us, and it's me, Adam, Brian, and we operate collectively, actually. Mm-hmm. So we all kind of share responsibilities in the company, and we all do work on different aspects of the Eclipse Phase game.
So one source book a month, right? You guys will just alternate?
Oh, yeah, we're just going to be spinning them out. Yeah, we're looking at doing like 4 a year, actually, with a bunch of PDF exclusive releases, like one every 2 months or possibly even more than that, once we get things rolling. And we do have ideas for doing other games down the line, but we haven't committed to anything fully yet. Adam has this game, card game Paparazzi, that
right.
he's been working on with Catalyst. That needs some more work, but we're talking about getting that out with Sandstorm too. And we also have another RPG line that we actually just licensed from somebody. Mm-hmm. I can't actually give you too many details yet because we're not announcing it yet.
Here, just give it to me without the vowels. No? Okay. All right. No, that's fine. So, I mean, I guess I apologize for asking the question. It's one that I really wanted to ask, but it's obviously very early in both the life cycle of Eclipse Phase and of Post-Human as a standalone entity to really, I guess, you know, push too far beyond. But, you know, it's something that we've talked on the show before about sometimes as a single game company, it's sometimes difficult to, you know, tug the sleeve of the guy you want to talk to because you've only got one game. And if it's a strong game, then you're all set. But it's something that we bumped into. And it's just, so I didn't want to go ahead and ask that. Now, Paparazzi, I've seen it demoed when it was at Catalyst. This is going to come out as a Post-Human game, or is this coming out under a different imprint, or how are you guys going to handle that?
No, it will come out as a Post-Human game.
Okay. Okay, and then are you guys targeting fall 2010, or do you not have a production date yet?
We do not have a production date yet. Okay. They basically they had like a first version of the game with a lot of artwork even.
Right.
But they play tested it at Gen Con last year, and they decided that they wanted to put some more work into the game, and so polished it up a little bit more before they put it out. And then things kind of went on hold with it at Catalyst. And so we're reviving the project, and we're going to finish polishing it up. But we're really just starting to look at that, so we don't have any dates yet.
What's coming up for Post-Human? I know Gen Con is next week. I know you guys are going to be there. Gen Con and beyond, what's coming up?
Well, we just released the PDF of our next source book, Sunward, which is for Eclipse Phase. That's the first setting source book, the inner system. Inner part of the solar system. The hard copy of that book will have at Gen Con, but it won't be in stores just yet. We don't have an actual street release date yet, but we'll have it soon.
Okay.
The Game Master Pack, which will also be at Gen Con, also isn't in stores yet because we had to repackage it because it had Catalyst logos and stuff on it. So we has a new sheet in the packaging. So that took a little while for us to finish up, but now that's going and will be out in stores next month. And then after that, we basically have a lineup of Eclipse Phase source books. There's going to be one on gate crashing, which is in the setting we have these Pandora gates, which are wormholes to other solar systems and exoplanets. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be about the process of going through those gates and different exoplanets and the factions that control them and that sort of stuff. there's going to be a book called Rimward. That's the setting source book for the outer half of the solar system,
okay.
Which is more the new economy and the more radical political elements. There'll be another source book that we don't actually have a final title for yet, and it's kind of a combo source book in that we're dealing with different factions, different elements of the game that you probably couldn't do a full source book for, but that we wanted to address in the game. So like things like space habitats, for example, because Eclipse Phase takes place almost primarily on habitats in space. And when you're dealing with settings like that, in a lot of settings, people, when they're gaming, like they plan settings they're familiar with. You know, like if you're running Shadowrun and you live in Denver, you probably run a game in Denver, you know.
Right.
But it's not really possible to do that with Eclipse Phase because all the settings are in space. So the people, like game masters and the players, are going to lack that sense of familiarity with what they're working with. So one of our goals was to take things like provide more details on how space habitats work, like what it's like to live there, what you can do there. So there's a section on habitats, there's a section on crime, there's a section on uplifted animals, and a few other parts of the book. So it's kind of just a selection of different aspects of the game that we wanted to delve into a little bit.
Gotcha. I don't want to diminish it by saying it's a lot of the fluffy stuff, but it sounds like a lot of the stuff that will help people maybe round out their world.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So,
and it's gonna all the books we have are gonna have, you know, all the source books are gonna have that sort of background fluff material, but then they have a chapter at the back that has new technology, new gear, new morphs,
yes,
new bodies.
Always balance the crunchy with the fluffy.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So. Well, Rob, thank you very much for being with us. I hope to catch up with you at Gen Con. I'll be working at the Catalyst booth. Sorry. I promised Randall I'd demo Leviathans. But that said, I'll come by your booth. I won't make you come by the Catalyst booth. But anyways, thanks for being on the show. And I really look forward to good things coming out of Posthuman.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, that was our interview with Mr. Rob Boyle of Posthuman Studios. And, Rhett, normally this would be the part of the show where we mention some upcoming stuff.
Well, we have some cool upcoming stuff. Gen Con.
Thank you. Yeah, we just covered that in depth. You know, a few minutes ago, folks, rewind if you want to hear. And but that's it for the show.
Yeah, our next show will be August 13th. That's Friday the 13th, always one of my favorite days.
Woo-hoo.
Will be a Gen Con wrap-up. We're looking to make that a very short show, folks, unlike this week.
Yes, we'll still be recovering, I think, from Gen Con. So.
It takes a while. I like to normally feel my legs about that time, too.
I was going to say I like to feel your legs, too.
Okay.
Check, please. Anyways, that's all for this show.
I'm Rhett Kipp.
And I'm Ben Clark. And no, I don't really want to touch
it. And the bell just went off. We just saved by the bell. I didn't know what that was.